Hello everyone and welcome to our Newsmakers podcast. This is Nick Castora, Products and Education Editor of The News. Today we're sitting down with Pamela Cargill, Principal of Kalisti Management Consulting. Pamela is going to discuss the benefits and the pitfalls of solar contracting, the current shape of the marketplace in HVAC, and more. Let's get to it. We are now joined on the show by Pamela Cargill, the Principal of Kalisti Management Consulting. Pamela, I'd like to start by kind of asking you for an overview of your history of helping solar contractors and the services that you offer.
Yeah, so I've actually been involved in residential rooftop solar probably about 12 years now, and I started as the second employee of a very small solar contractor in Western Massachusetts. So basically the work that I did with them, which was really my first big gig in the industry, was turning them into a $1 million company in a year. And that was really, how I did that was really through, you know, project management control, helping my boss, who was the president of the company, get much more focused on a shorter amount of activities and me taking over the back office. And basically through segmenting a lot of those responsibilities, you know, that's really how we were able to do it. And so we grew and we were acquired. And then, you know, the regional company that came out of that, which was serving, you know, most of the states in New England down through the Eastern Seaboard, you know, I worked basically there on, you know, spinning up other programs that helped us grow. So the first content marketing and social media strategies in 2009. So under Solar Rights, that was the regional installer that we became. I helped them spin up a lot of the content marketing and social media strategies that helped us grow in late 2008, early 2009. And from there, I expanded my career into the early growing third-party ownership part of the industry. So this is the solar leasing and PPAs that a lot of people are familiar with. And I worked at Syngevity through that. And I really helped them coming in into their operations and looking, you know, across the entirety of operations, that all of the opportunities for streamlining the company. So through that, I worked on implementing enterprise software that helped members of operations across different teams work most effectively together. And through a lot of that work, I really came back to that understanding that, you know, I really like a lot of these kind of benefits to come back to the small and regional installers, which is really where my heart was. And so that's what encouraged me to go and found Kalisti, the company that I now operate, my consulting firm, to basically help small and regional contractors in the solar industry and who are interested in moving into the solar industry benefit from a lot of these best practices that I've learned over this long career I've had in solar.
Yeah, and some of those best practices and some of the pitfalls, those are some of the questions I definitely want to ask you over the course of the podcast. One of the first ones I'd like to ask, though, is kind of a broad picture overview. And what are some of the biggest trends that you're currently seeing emerging in the solar contracting marketplace, particularly as it relates to HVAC?
So that's interesting. So there are two big ones, especially with regard to the market. One of them is this sort of potential for the Internet of Things, and I know you guys have talked about this a little bit in some of your shows and in some of the content that I've read, you know, through your website. You know, the Internet of Things is a really interesting tie-in here, and there are a lot of companies that are offering hardware to the solar industry that are looking at tie-ins with the output of solar PV systems and other appliances in the home, and making it a more cohesive experience for the consumer. I still think that's a really early market, but I think it's a really interesting trend that we need to keep our eyes on. So that's one big area. The second one is this shift that's happening in the industry. You know how I was talking during my kind of intro about, you know, moving into that third-party ownership part of the industry. Well, that model is starting to contract, because the cost of solar has come down so much that cash-based and just loan-based finance is really making a resurgence. And these types of financial services are really the bread and butter of small and local contractors. So that I really see, you know, benefits this particular audience that we're speaking to.
Yeah, and you talk about those benefits. I was hoping you could detail for us some of the biggest opportunities that you're currently seeing in solar contracting.
Yeah, so one of them I'd say, I mean, especially that I'd hit the hammer on is being able to reach back to the customer base that we already have. So many contractors who work in traditional trades, HVAC, electrical, roofing, have a base of customers that they've already worked with. And when you add solar to your offering, you can now go back to this happy base of customers that you already have and say, hey, we're now offering solar. And, you know, that's the lowest cost form of customer acquisition, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really a huge opportunity I see, and definitely a way that traditional tradesmen have a real leg up on, I think, some of the pure play solar contractors that are coming to the market and trying to build business from scratch. Mm-hmm. So another kind of opportunity that I'm seeing, though kind of like the Internet of Things, it's coming, so we need to keep our eye on it, is really this whole conversation around energy storage products and services. Mm-hmm. So this is like, you know, the Tesla Powerwall, just to kind of name a big brand that maybe people would have heard of. But there are lots of other kinds of energy storage products and services. So this is a really, you know, nascent market. I'd say the only real viable marketplace for this right now is on the Hawaiian Islands, mm-hmm. and that has to do with a lot of the policies there and a lot of the utility rates, which is the perfect storm that's making energy storage for consumers possible. But definitely keep your eye on that one.
So let's talk from a consumer standpoint, and kind of where are you seeing the demand for solar capabilities? Is solar something that's really growing steady nationwide, or is it something where the demand is still holding at more of a regional level? And again, that's from a consumer standpoint.
Okay, so you know when you take the 30,000 foot view of the United States, 65% of the solar market is still in California, and I'd say most of that market is actually in Southern California. But at the same time, you know, solar is very local. So as you start to zoom down at the state level, and then you start looking within the states, you see these micro markets emerging. And a lot of these micro markets, so let's take the state of Massachusetts for an example. Mm-hmm. So within Massachusetts, now this is a state that I came up in my career in the solar industry. There were four distinct micro markets just in Massachusetts. Pretty small state, probably the size of like one county in Southern California. But a lot of that has to do with what utility is operating in that area. What are the consumer demographics in that area in terms of income, education, how much are they paying for their utility bills monthly? That's a big driver because a lot of people are focused on savings. So, you know, when contractors are looking at, is the solar market ripe and ready in my area, they have to look at these different market signals.
Yeah.
So are there policies in place, meaning is there something like net energy metering, which is the crediting mechanism? Are utility rates high or reasonably high? For instance, are people paying more than $200 a month on their utility bill? So there's a lot of little signals like that that contractors can look for that can help them determine if it's time for them to think about getting into the solar market.
Yeah, and that kind of leads.
And in terms
oh,
of,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's kind of where I wanted to ask was about contractors and what they need to be aware of, and was some of, I guess, what are some of those potential pitfalls that they need to be aware of before they dive into the solar marketplace?
Yeah, there are a couple. So if I was to kind of bullet point the big ones, the categories for that are really, you know, your training plan. Mm-hmm. So essentially, who would you have to retrain in your organization in order to serve that new product or service into that new demographic or back to your current customers? So that's sales staff. Obviously, there's a sales plan. There's your back office staff. There's different types of paperwork that you have to fill out that have to, not just your permit anymore, now you have to also deal with a local utility. So that's a new authority having jurisdiction that you need to keep in mind. And then your technicians. So how will you need to retrain your technicians in order to install the solar products? Mm-hmm. So that's just the retraining bucket. Then there's your marketing. So how are you going to frame that you're offering solar products and services, both back to your current customer base and then maybe out into the community? Are you now going to be, you know, John's, you know, air heating, cooling, and solar? Are you going to have to change your company name? You know, I've seen that happen with a number of companies, you know, out where I am now in California. They've changed their name to reflect that they're offering solar now. So I see some companies who do roofing, they're now John's Roofing and Solar, for example. Then there's the sales process. So the most effective way to sell solar is to sell it at the same time that you're offering another product. For instance, you're doing a re-roof, you want to offer solar at the same time, not coming back later and offering it. That's the most effective way to do it, especially if you can bundle with finance. Same thing with HVAC. If you're in doing an air conditioning repair, maybe you can talk to people about solar because you're already pointing at their, you know, parts of their home, talking about their energy bill. That might be a good time to open the conversation for solar. So you have to consider how you're going to work solar into the conversation at the right time and in the right way.
Yeah, well,
and then the last area is policy.
Yeah.
And this is the one where I really see people trip up the most. It's, you know, solar is just not, it's just not another trade. There's also this whole highly regulated framework that you have to operate in. The energy market, very regulated. You know, the policy language can be very obtuse. And, you know, this is really where teaming up with your local state SEIA affiliate is going to be crucial to your success. They can help get you the information that you need. You know, contractors are very busy. They don't often have time to go weed through 100-page documents of utility proceedings. The SEIA organization in your state can help you with that.
So what are some of those, and you touched on with policy, I guess, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see these contractors make when they first decide that they're going to get involved with solar?
Usually it's actually ignoring this policy area and just kind of taking it for granted. So let me give an example of that. So last year, in December of 2015, the Public Utility Commission in Nevada ruled to end net energy metering. So this is, net energy metering is the framework by which consumers get compensated for the solar they put back on the grid at the same rate of the retail electricity that they buy it. So you get credited back at, you know, 20 cents a kilowatt hour for the solar you put back for what you use. So that's kind of how that works. And basically that was, you know, thrown away overnight. They said, no, we're ending net energy metering. The rooftop solar industry in Nevada collapsed within weeks. Many, many people went out of business. Big companies like SolarCity and others, you know, that operate more at national scale, pulled out. Thousands of people lost their jobs. You know, so, like, we cannot take this lightly. Now, you know, the golden lining is that here we are a year later, Nevada is starting to put net energy metering back in place. Yay, that's great. But it was scary for a while.
Yeah.
And we need to keep in mind that, you know, these policy mechanisms, like any other law, they can be changed. Laws change. So we have to be vigilant. And, you know, so it's like, that's why it's so critical that you have your shop really buttoned up and running effectively, so you can pull your head up above the sand and look around and see what are the external things happening in the marketplace that could blindside you.
Yeah, and you talk about kind of understanding the marketplace. I was wondering if are there any misconceptions and just general ones that you see from contractors, misconceptions about solar energy, you kind of often have to help them understand as they start to get involved?
Yeah, I mean, aside from this policy area, which is a really big one, it's really the effect of the sales cycle. So a lot of times people underestimate that the solar sale is actually much more complicated. And because it's such a new product, consumers have a lot of questions. And they want to do a lot of research, it takes a lot of education, and it takes them longer to make up their mind. So it may affect your sales cycle. So for instance, if it takes you on average maybe somewhere between 1 week to 3 weeks to close on a normal project, it may take you another few weeks with that solar customer. How is that going to affect your cash flow? How is that going to affect your commission payments to your sales team? What can you do up front to educate customers before they start talking to a salesperson to shorten that time? But it all comes down to education. And that will require a different amount of investment from the contractor, and it will require some thinking ahead in terms of, you know, anticipating customer questions and making sure that your marketing material can help answer them, and then your salespeople are ready to answer them when it's time to sit down face-to-face.
Yeah, and again, talking about policy a bit here, but what are some of what's been going on with the tax credit surrounding solar? I guess what's the most recent happenings from a legislation standpoint?
Oh, that's a great one. So, the last December, we had the federal investment tax credit for solar extended. So basically, it's extended as it is now, which is 30% of the cost of the project. Minus incentives. There are a lot of details here. And that's through 2019. And then after 2019, it's going to step down every year. So it's 30% through 2019, then 26% across the 2020 year, 22% in 2021, and then after that, it ends for residential. And that's as it stands now. So that's the federal tax credit. Now, again, all solar is local, so some states have state tax credits that have to do with installing solar or other kinds of energy improvement products. Some utilities have special incentive programs or credits that are available. And again, it's good when contractors are doing their due diligence to look at what these programs are. A great resource that I recommend is called Desire USA. That's DesireUSA.org. It's a website where you can look up the credits and incentives that are available. And of course, what I always say is it's great to have these aggregator sites, but always check with the local program after you look up these programs on Desire to make sure that those incentives are still in place or what level they're at.
Well, and to wrap up, Pamela, if people want to learn more about you and the services that you're offering, where can they turn?
So I have a lot of resources available at my website, and that's kaolysty.com. That's kaolysty.com. And I definitely encourage contractors especially to get on my monthly newsletter, which is aimed toward contractors. Lots of great content about what's happening in the industry, content that I've written about solar policy or other ways that you can improve your business. And then, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at KOLIST. That's my company name, minus the I, or look me up on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Pamela, for stopping by the Newsmakers Podcast.
I was happy to be here. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Pamela, learned a bit more about solar contracting, how to get involved, and the current shape of the market. Thanks for listening, and we encourage you to join us for the remainder of our Newsmaker series at achrnews.com or for free on iTunes. For more information, visit www.achrnews.com.